One of the truisms of the restaurant business is that the people you work with become your family. Now, depending on the people, it could be one big happy family or, like, you know, a dysfunctional cult. But if you find yourself night after night working when most other people are playing, and you all leave work together charged on adrenaline when everyone else is asleep, you can see why these people become your people. And then there are wine people. Among sommeliers, there's a particular bond. You know, a deep knowledge of wine, yeah, but also that no one else really quite understands why you care so much about wine, except your sommelier family. Bianca Bosker tells us a story of how she fell into this family.
Perfume was the first to go, but I'd been expecting that. Scented detergent followed, then dryer sheets. I wasn't sorry to give up raw onions or hot sauce. I went through a dark phase when I cut out coffee. But by that point, I was used to being a little slow in the morning. Daytime sobriety was ancient history, along with all hot liquids, the enamel in my teeth, and my Advil supply. All this was part of the routine I cobbled together at the advice of more than two dozen sommeliers, who, during the span of more than a year, became my mentors, tormentors, drill sergeants, bosses, and friends. I'd come to them a wine ignoramus, which had never bothered me until I discovered this world of fanatical cork dorks. These people live for taste. They train their senses the way Olympians train their bodies. They divorce spouses to spend more time studying bottles, and they detect stories where the rest of us pick up merely smells. I was living at the opposite extreme. As the tech editor for an online website, I'd spent 5 years at screens immersed in a world that couldn't be touched, tasted, or smelled. It was a life of sensory deprivation, not sensory cultivation. And as I learned more about this elite subculture of somms, I got fixated. What was I missing? I came to them wanting to know what life was like at the extremes of taste. Then it became a question of whether I could get there too, if any one of us could get there, and what would change if we did. Despite my loved ones' objections, I quit my steady job and got hired as a cellar rat, the lowest of the low in the wine world. From there, I set out to train as a sommelier. As a journalist, I'd maintained more or less the same routine for half a decade. Wake up, take the subway to 8th Street, and arrive at the office by 9:30 a.m. in time for our editorial meeting. Under my new regime as an official member of New York's Wine Army, I began visiting free tastings hosted by wine distributors, those middlemen who sell to stores and restaurants. Most days, I was nursing my first glass of wine around the same hour I'd usually be running through the morning's headlines. I was drunk by noon, hungover by 2 p.m., and around 4 in the afternoon, deeply regretting the burger I'd devoured for lunch. I discovered that New York is a much, much drunker city than I'd ever imagined. At any time of the day, any day of the week, I could join men in suits to stagger around, purple-toothed and a little buzzed, sampling the newest wines. I took the advice of a young somm who'd also learned to taste on a budget and used the tastings to figure out the distinct flavor profile of the classic grape varieties. One week, I drank nothing but Sauvignon Blanc. The next week would be exclusively Riesling, then Tempranillo, and so on. I was trying to wrap my tongue around each one's character, Merlot's plumminess, say, or Pinot Noir's cherryness, and understand how that grape changed as it crossed climates and countries. Every Thursday, I'd stumble back over to the restaurant where I worked for yet another round of tastings. For 2.5 hours, sales reps stopped by with suitcases full of bottles. I tried them all, but that still wasn't enough drinking. To hone my flavor sensing skills, I needed to learn to blind taste. In other words, to figure out through taste and smell alone the year wine was made, from what grapes, and in what corner of the planet. So far, I'd weaseled my way into 2 blind tasting groups. Fridays, I met with beginners. Wednesdays, I joined advanced sommeliers. They like to taste early in the day, believing their senses to be more alert in the morning than after a day of stimulation. So at 10 a.m. every Wednesday, we'd show up to a somm's apartment in Queens, lugging bottles hidden under crumpled aluminum foil or tucked into knee socks. In between my liquid training, I was sniffing at quinces, munching a mix of apple species, and seeing how long I could smell herbs at my local Fairway supermarket before arousing the suspicions of the security guard. Master sommeliers had advised me to develop my sense memory, to implant the impression of animals, vegetables, and minerals in my mind so deeply I'd be able to recognize these odors in a wine. The advice kept coming. Taste all different types of citruses. Try the peel, the pith, the juice. Someone else recommended that I add a little dirt to my diet. Lick rocks when you're around outside, he said. I lick rocks all the time, he assured me. What kind of rocks? I asked. Any rocks that I haven't licked before, he answered. It's fun to taste the difference between red slate and blue slate. My husband came home early from work one evening and caught me gumming gravel. He was quiet for a long time before he gave me the sanest advice yet. Have you thought about asking for your old job back?
Bianca Bosker is the author of Cork Dork, and she left us with a list of the books that pointed her way towards wine dorkdom. Find it at splendidtable.org.